From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to be here with you. We got a very good show for you this week. Author Stephen King will be joining us later to play Not My Job. But first, as you have no doubt heard, there is a worldwide food shortage going on. It's tragic, and it has finally begun to hit home in the world of public radio listeners. Slate.com reported that Itorki, a fine sheep cheese from the Basque region of Spain, is now up to $22 a pound due to shortages.
No.
It's also, in cruel coincidence, the same high price now being fetched by a pound of Italian prosciutto di Parma. Scattered reports from dinner parties in Santa Monica and Cambridge indicate that in some instances there has been rationing of the amuse-bouche. We just want to say we stand with you all in solidarity, and we here at Wait Wait have decided to switch for the duration of this crisis to domestic cheeses. Yes, we can. To express your solidarity with us, give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Jamie in Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City. It's a beautiful place. What do you do there?
I'm a biologist, and I study sexual behavior in worms.
Really? Did you say worms or Mormons?
Worms.
Worms.
Oh.
Now, is it true that one worm can do both things?
Yeah, actually.
Play both roles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
At the same time, I mean...
Yeah, it usually takes two, but the ones I work on, you could just get by with a single one. Ooh.
So one worm will pull over and ask for directions on one end, but at the other end won't?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Welcome to the show, Jamie. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher and the author of the novel Schrodinger's Ball, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, Jamie.
Next, say hello to a comedian who'll be appearing at the Capital Center for the Arts in Concord, New Hampshire on Friday, June 6th, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Paula.
Hey, Jamie.
And finally, say hello to a humorist and author most recently of Long Time Leaving, Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr., right there.
Hey, Roy. Mm-hmm.
Jamie, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yeah, great.
All right. Yes, it is. You are ready. Here we go.
Okay.
Here is your first quote.
Divisive, outrageous, appalling, objectionable, offensive, inexcusable.
Those, as collected by the Chicago Sun-Times, were just a few of the things that Barack Obama had to say about a man he now wishes would just go away. Who?
His pastor,
yes.
Jeremiah Wright.
Jeremiah Wright,
yeah.
Very good. When the first very brief snippets of Barack Obama's former pastor's speeches appeared on TV, some of his defenders said, well, you know, he didn't mean it all, you've got to see him in context. Well, after several days of context, we can now say, he meant it.
Oh.
Wright affirmed that he believes that 9/11 was a retribution for America's own sins, that the U.S. government may have invented AIDS to target blacks, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Oh, wait a minute, that wasn't one of his, sorry. Barack Obama denounced the man who was once his mentor. When that was not deemed sufficient, the senator announced plans to recite the Pledge of Allegiance while joining an Episcopal church in Connecticut. And then Obama will poke Reverend Wright with his new American flag lapel pin.
Until this week, I thought it was impossible for two people to simultaneously throw each other under a bus.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And why would you want a preacher who didn't go off the deep end? I mean, that's the whole point of preaching, is to get carried away and to get off beyond sort of things that are respectable. Sure.
What church do you go to? Maybe I've misinterpreted what you're supposed to do in the church. You're supposed to go off the deep end and say things that aren't respectable? Is that what you said?
The first church of Twist and Shout.
Gee, we sang hymns and slept.
All right, Jimmy, here is your second quote.
So I firmly believe that, you know, if there was a magic wand to wave, I'd be waving it, of course.
That was President Bush laying out his careful strategy he's come up with to deal with what?
Let's see. The economy's going south.
The economy is the answer, yes. As the economy continues to deflate and gas prices hit $4 a gallon and keep on rising, President Bush decided to hold a news conference to explain his detailed plan. In addition to wishing for a magic wand he does not have, he has decided to lead us back to prosperity by blaming Congress. And he has a point. If he hadn't been in charge for the past 7 years, there's no telling what those evil Congress people might have done to the economy. He's held them in check.
You know, if there's one person you'd want to keep away from an actual magic wand.
Right.
Can't you see that press conference?
Right.
Okay, I suppose you're all wondering why I now have antlers. Funny story.
It's not easy to screw up abracadabra. But yeah, but
there it was. Dabra camabra. Yeah. Oh, no.
Spoing.
You don't think he'd use it for vengeance?
I think he might try.
All right, here is your last quote, Jimmy.
I think it's really artsy. It wasn't in a skanky way.
That was someone defending some photos that were taken of her. They've caused quite a scandal. Who are we talking about?
Ooh.
Ooh?
Celebrity question.
Yes. Do you have any young children, say girls, between the ages of, say, 7 and 13?
Yeah, that's... No. I'm going to have to... I give up.
It's Miley Cyrus, also known as Hannah Montana. Heard of her?
Yeah, you've heard of her.
Oh,
I knew that.
Miss Cyrus is one of the biggest pop stars today. She's a 15-year-old singer who sells out arenas both as herself and as her Disney Channel character, Hannah Montana. She is marketed as the sweet, innocent, wholesome alternative to all those pop tarts like Britney and Paris. So it's kind of a problem when Vanity Fair published a photo of the young woman clearly not wearing a shirt, though she does have a blanket pressed demurely up to her. It's like Hannah Montana's softcore slumber party. The Disney Corporation is reportedly very upset. They're afraid that it'll ruin their franchise, but our bet is, given how much money Britney Spears still makes, that Disney has got Plan B all ready to go for Miss Cyrus's 18th birthday, in which her character will change her name to Hannah Nicole Smith.
I think if it goes really well, Annie Leibovitz will photograph Dora the Explorer. That's what I think.
And I think we're going to see a side of Dora we've never seen before.
Carl, how did Jamie do in our quiz?
Jamie had 2 correct answers, Peter. That's good enough to win our prize. Congratulations, Jamie.
All right. Yeah.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Paula, the New York Times this week reported on new problems with election ballots, where else but in Florida, where 3% of the population has, perhaps by mistake, acknowledged on their voter registration cards that they are what?
Dead?
No. I'll give you a hint. If you want to vote in Florida and think it's going to do any good, then you probably must be.
Crazy?
Yes. Crazy. Insane. Ever since the 2000 recount, Florida has worked to fix its voting system. And now, after years of tinkering, you have a better chance of winning the Powerball than being allowed to vote in that state. Example number one, the crazy box. People registering to vote must check a box that says, in essence, I am not crazy, I am competent enough to vote. If you don't check it, if you forget, then you are crazy.
Why is that on there?
Yeah, I mean, are crazy people going to go like, oh, I guess I can't check that box? My invisible friend tells me that's not a box to check.
It That's not a criteria for voting, though.
Apparently it is. In Florida, you have to be legally competent to vote. And so they want you to...
And the way that
says?
You're... Whose idea was it to opt in to sanity? It's not like sanity is a calling plan.
You have to choose it.
Oh, I was schizophrenic, but now I've checked this box, I feel great. The five of us can go home.
But who? So the Florida voters put that on their thing?
Presumably the Florida legislature trying to clarify, streamline, make sure there are no more problems. They just want to make sure that everybody is sane.
But that wasn't the original problem.
There were the Jewish ladies who voted for Pat Buchanan, so yeah. I'm thinking maybe there was...
It's just... I understand the idea, but their method of ascertaining whether somebody's sane is insane.
The Florida legislature will presumably not be allowed to vote.
Unless they check that box.
Exactly.
In which case, you must be as sane as this sign to vote.
A little clown standing there holding his hand out. Yeah. Going like, yeah. Thank you all. It is time once again now for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. It's Steve Bradley from Davidson, North Carolina.
Hey, how are things in North Carolina?
Things are very good. It's springtime and the grass is grown and everything's beautiful.
What do you do there?
I am an engineer. I work for a flooring company.
Mm-hmm. You make sure that they stay firmly on the floor.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's good. Well, welcome to our show, Steve. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Steve's topic?
Good luck with that, okay?
There are just some things you can't undo. You can't turn a pickle back into a cucumber. You can't unscramble an egg. But despite all this, we recently read about someone trying to undo something that is long past done. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about people trying to turn back time. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes, sir.
Well, first, let's hear from Adam Felber.
When the Absolut Vodka people ran that controversial ad in Mexico last month, depicting an idealized map where Mexico still owned the southwest and Pacific coast of the United States, the ad's defender said it was clearly all in good fun. Not so fast, amigos. The Take Back Mexico League, or El Club de Reclamar Mexico, has announced a 700% increase in membership since then, and this week they filed suit in U.S. federal court to reclaim for Mexico all the territory lost in what they say were the illegal wars of the 1830s and 40s. Things will definitely be different if they succeed. For instance, 60% of the world's Taco Bells would suddenly be south of the border. The Minutemen will have to make do with patrolling the new border fence near Boise. And, of course, Mexicans will be outraged that Americans coming in and taking their jobs in Hollywood and Dallas. League President Victor Rojas says he's aware that his chances might be slim, but, quote, imagine if we succeed. It will bring a whole new meaning to Montezuma's revenge.
A group trying to unfight the Mexican-American War. Your next story of someone wishing they had a Wayback Machine comes from Paula Poundstone.
The plans for the birth of Saucony Chocolate Massey, granddaughter of producer, director Ivan Reitman, were big. Family and friends were flying in from Paris. The nursery mural was hand-painted and the reality TV show was negotiated. But when the baby arrived, happy and healthy, 2 weeks earlier than expected, China Reitman Massey tried to put it back. When obstetrician Dr. Wendy Wax told her it couldn't be done, she threatened to sue the doctor and the hospital. She wouldn't breathe when I told her to, said Dr. Wax, and she kept trying to suck the baby back in. I never saw anything like it. She said the show wasn't ready to tape yet and kept screaming at the nurse to get the birth on her cell phone. 2 days later, Liz Okonyaki answered an ad to be a surrogate for Ms. Massey. I thought I was going to carry her eggs. But she actually was asking me to be implanted with a newborn. I said no. No one would help me, claimed Ms. Massey. Now my TV show is ruined. Stuff like this always happens to me.
A woman trying to take her baby back, as it were, because the TV show wasn't ready to go. Your last story of an attempt to close the proverbial sardine can after the sardines have escaped comes from Roy Blunt Jr.
When a fella comes from an old family on the Greek island of Lesbos, He wants to be able to say, I'm a lesbian, my dad was a lesbian, and so was his dad before him. He wants his high school teams, boys and girls respectively, to be the fighting lesbians and the fighting lady lesbians or lesbianettes. And nobody's saying, not that there's anything wrong with that. That is why three Lesbos Islanders have filed suit to enjoin a Greek gay rights organization from using the word lesbian in its title. Let them visit Lesbos and get married and whatever, said one of the plaintiffs. But as it is, my sister can't say she's a lesbian.
These are problematic, I agree. All right. So, Steve, here are your three choices. From Adam Felber, the story of a group who believes that through a lawsuit they can take back most of the American Southwest. From Paula Poundstone, the story of a Hollywood woman who was so eager not to have her baby that she actually tried to un-give birth to it. And from Roy Blunt Jr., the story of how the people of Lesbos, an island in Greece, have filed suit to keep gay people from calling themselves lesbians. Which of these is a rearguard effort that probably came too late?
Well, I like the European spin of Paula's answer, but with Cinco de Mayo right around the corner, I think I'm going to go with Adam's story about taking back Mexico.
All right, that's your choice. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to someone directly affected by this real story. Listen closely. This person does have, in fact, a pronounced accent.
A person from Athens is an Athenian. A person from Creta is a Cretan. And a person from Lesbos is a lesbian. I am a lesbian. And whenever I say it in England or in the States, or to some friends, when I say I'm a lesbian, they laugh at me.
I can't imagine why. That was Stratis Panagos, a resident of Lesbos, an island in Greece, explaining that, yes, people do laugh when he proclaims proudly that he is a lesbian.
Yeah. You know, there is a very highly respected university on Lesbos.
What is it called?
It's the University of Lesbos, but it's just amazing how many people are just lesbians during college.
Anyway, Steve, I'm sorry. As you have no doubt figured out, it was Roy who had the true answer about the island of Lesbos. You did not win, but you earned a point for Adam for his rather frightening story of the Mexican group trying to take back the American Southwest. I'm sure wherever Tom Tancredo is, he's probably ran out the door to stop it already.
Very good. Maybe I have a new vacation destination.
There you go. Well, good for you. Thank you so much for playing our game.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we invite very successful people on to answer the kinds of questions they thought they'd only have to deal with if they had failed. More than 30 years ago, there was this high school teacher in Maine. He was trying to write in his spare time. And one day, his wife found a manuscript that he had thrown in the trash, and she picked it up, and she read through it, and she said, hey, this isn't so bad. Maybe you should pick it up and finish it. And so Stephen King finished Carrie, his first international bestseller. It was followed by approximately 4,000 more of them. It's made him one of the most successful authors in human history. Stephen King, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. You know, we looked up a little bit about you, your biography from your own website. There seems to be nothing in your childhood to indicate that you would become, to use the cliched phrase, the modern master of horror, the person who scared more people than, well, anybody outside of political office. Do you have an explanation for what led you to all this scary, monstrous stuff?
No, but I have a question. Why do you ask about my childhood? You know what? Everybody does that because there's sort of this unspoken subtext. What screwed you up?
Yeah, well, I didn't want to put it that bluntly, but maybe I should have just gone there.
Hey, listen, I've been around. This is my first rodeo. I'm used to that question.
Yeah, I can imagine. And what is your answer when that question is asked?
I just lie.
You just lie?
Yeah, sure.
What do you mean? Do you lie in the sort of the
Baroque? No. I don't actually lie, but nobody believes the truth, which is I had a perfectly normal childhood.
Yeah.
And I just like scary things. It's part of the equipment.
Did you, when you were a kid, was that your thrill? Did you like scary books, scary movies? That was your
sure,
thrill?
Yeah. I just read this wonderful book about the comics from the 50s, and that was what really warped my grooves, I would say, to begin with. Things like Vault of Horror and Crypt of Terror.
Oh, sure.
Like
the old EC Comics. That's
pre-code.
Do you think your mother waking you up with a cleaver had any kind of effect?
No. What happened was I read about the cleaver, and I woke her up. Can I get into bed with you? And that's pretty Freudian right there.
Yeah, I guess so. However, I mean, speaking of your childhood, one of the things that drew me so much to your books when I was a kid, when I was sort of a geeky teenager, is that there were a lot of geeky teenagers in your books who either became the heroes and defeated the villain, or even more alluringly, gained supernatural powers and wreaked vengeance upon their many enemies.
Yeah, right.
We think of Carrie, we think of the lead character in Christine. So were you saying anything about your own high school years?
No, but I saw a lot in high school. I think everybody, first of all, everybody in high school feels like the geek. I always felt like if you are 10 years out of high school and you say, damn, those were the best years of my life, I don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah. They all end up being cops in the town they grew up with, so they're easy to avoid.
Wow.
Oh, Peter, you're going to get emails on that one.
Yeah, I know.
Not to mention traffic tickets.
Yeah, I know.
I'd take the bus from now on, Stephen.
Stephen, I wanted to ask you this. I mean, as a big fan, I know that one of the things that you're very good at is you take the mundane, you're very good at sort of the mundane details of life, and then you make them terrifying. You add details or your twists or monsters that, like, you know, for example, the supermarket in The Mist becomes this horrible place, or a car is possessed, or a dog in Cujo. Well, we were wondering, given that insight you have into what's frightening, how do you think we could make this radio show frightening? How could we make, I mean, would it be possible to sort of take this sort of very mild-mannered public radio news quiz and make it scary? What would we have to do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're kind of like putting me under the gun here, but probably in radio, wouldn't you say the scariest thing is dead air?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I mean, think about that air, if that air was really dead and then it came alive. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Think it's got possibilities?
Yeah.
All right.
Right. Like if we stopped talking, terrible things could happen.
Well, yes. Sort of terrible things could happen probably to you in the studio.
Good.
Should this cord be going around Adam's neck right now?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, welcome to Radio Drama.
That's great.
Tales calculated to keep you in.
Suspense.
That's right.
Well, Stephen King, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You're the warmest, fluffiest, most unthreatening friend ever.
So you've made your living frightening people, so we thought we'd ask you three questions about the people and things that were created to undo the psychic damage that you have wrought. Answer two of these three charming, lovely, kind questions, right? You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine.
I hope your listener isn't pining for that prize.
No. I'm sure they don't care. Carl, who is author Stephen? I'm just trying to make him feel better.
I got you.
I'm just trying to lower the tension for Mr. King.
If only the radio listeners could see that single tear trickling down Carl's face right now.
All right, here we go. Carl, who is author Stephen King playing for?
He is playing for Laird and Diane Kentor from Houston, Texas.
All right, ready to play?
I'm ready to play.
All right, first question, we all remember Lamb Chop, the adorable puppet character, performed and voiced by Sherry Lewis. That's right. Lamb Chop. Ms. Lewis, although sweet and kind to everyone, mostly, had her peculiarities, including which of these? A, in private, she liked to vent her frustrations and anger with what she called a just-for-me puppet named Meat Grinder. B, whenever she went out to eat, she liked to order lamb chops, rare, just to horrify the waiters. Or C, sometimes she would suddenly hit or pinch the person standing next to her and say, sorry, but lamb chop told me to do that.
Well, the one that's the most attractive is the homicidal puppet, of course.
Yes.
But I'm going to go for C.
You're going to go for C? That she would just pinch people and go, oh, I'm sorry.
Pinch people, lamb chop told me to do that.
Yes, and she could not resist. Sadly, it was B. She liked to order lamb chops in restaurants. She said she did that, quote, at every opportunity. You still have two chances here, so we can still win this thing. Perhaps the most widely known cute and lovable character around the world is Hello Kitty, introduced by the Japanese company Sanrio back in 1976. The mouthless kitty cat has appeared in a huge variety of products, including, most recently, which of these? A, the Hello Kitty brand toupee. B, a small, easily concealable Hello Kitty revolver. Or C, crates of contraband Hello Kitty cocaine.
I'm going to go for the concealable revolver.
The Hello Kitty concealable revolver.
That's my choice.
I'm afraid it was the cocaine. Just a few weeks ago, Guatemalan police intercepted 1.3 tons of cocaine on its way to Mexico. It was packed in containers, each marked with a smiling Hello Kitty on it.
Mm. Well, I wonder if that was probably copyright infringement.
It might be, and I know you're sensitive to that. What was hard about this was we were writing up this question, and we were trying to find like two fake things that Hello Kitty has not been on.
It's hard.
It's hard. For example, one of our original ideas was Hello Kitty condoms. They exist.
Mm. I don't even want to think about that.
The Hello Kitty AK-47.
No.
It exists.
Oh. The thought of a Hello Kitty condom just sort of makes my night.
It really does.
Really brings a whole new meaning to Hello Kitty, doesn't
it? Yeah, it really does. Hello Kitty.
I thought it, but I wasn't.
That does not deserve it. That joke was just hanging there.
Thanks for chopping it down.
Yeah. You have one more question. Here we go. Get this one right.
I'm hanging by a thread here.
You can do this. Barney the Purple Dinosaur is, of course, a huge hit on children's TV. Has been for years. However, he recently played a key role in world events. What? A, President Bush mentioned to a friend that everything he knew about treating other people he learned from Barney. B, a dispute over the rights to manufacture Barney dolls has led to a violent fight between factory workers in Malaysia. Or C, U.S. soldiers used Barney songs to break the will of prisoners right after the invasion of Iraq.
These all sound very plausible to me, too. Is there anything there about Barney condoms?
No.
Brings a whole new meaning to the concept of a purple dinosaur.
Troops used Barney what to break the will of...
They used Barney songs. You know, like, I love you, you love me.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Well, I'm going to go for that one. I'm going to go for C.
They use Barney songs to interrogate prisoners. You're right, sir. Well done.
Hey.
They played Barney songs as well as heavy metal and Sesame Street music at prisoners in order to wear them down. One operative told the BBC, quote, in training, they forced me to listen to the Barney I Love You song for 45 minutes. I never want to go through that again, unquote. Carl, how did Stephen King do on our quiz?
He needed two correct answers to win for Laird and Diane Cantor, but he had just one correct answer, Peter.
Oh. Do you have any imaginative ideas for the vengeance you could wreak upon us?
No, all I can do is kind of, you know, guilt trip you and say I did my best.
You did.
That hurts more than anything.
It really does. Stephen King is one of the best-selling authors in the history of letters. His most recent book, as written by the pseudonymous Richard Bachman, is Duma Key. Stephen King, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, as you heard, President Bush this week criticized Congress for what he said was their inability to deal with the big issues now facing the country. But on the same day the president made those allegations, the House, as if to show him up, actually passed two important bills. Please, if you can, name just one of them.
One of the important bills that they passed.
To show that they're on top of our problems.
Wait a minute. This is some kind of trick. What day did the president speak, Peter?
The president spoke, if I'm not mistaken, on Tuesday.
Oh, let me break out my congressional record then. Can I have a hint of some sort? Just because Tuesday was such a...
Well, one of the bills, we don't have the final copy, but it read something like, whereas this nation is approaching the warmest season, which will hence be known as a time for all Americans to spit seeds all over the place.
The Welcome Summer Bill. The Welcome Spring Bill.
No, not quite.
The
More specific.
The
Summer Fruit.
Oh, the We Love Watermelon Bill.
Exactly. Yes. They passed a bill designating National Watermelon Month, and...
Was it a bill or a sense of Congress resolution?
No, no, this is binding legislation, my friend.
Oh, okay.
Our congressman ran on this.
This is the law of the land. In addition, not just that, just to show how busy they are, they also passed a bill creating National Funeral Director and Mortician Recognition Day.
And what day is that?
Whatever day it is, I suggest you stay inside. Roy, the saga of the Army Corps of Engineers in New Orleans continued this week after a TV station in the city showed that newly rebuilt flood walls had been filled with what?
Well, this is going to sound bad, but I'm sure it's a lot better class of paper than we would think. It's just paper, shredded paper.
Yeah, actually crumpled up newspaper is what they used. You may remember what happened to the city of New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina when the flood walls and levees failed. It was bad. Uh-huh. It was bad. Yeah. So, of course, it was pretty important to rebuild those flood walls and levees better than they were. Sadly, it looks like we're going to have to hope that the third time is the charm. A TV station caught a government contractor stuffing a newly built flood wall with newspapers rather than the rubber insulation the specs called for.
Oof.
Spokesman said it wasn't a problem, it was just a money saver. Besides, everybody knows that newspaper is surprisingly flexible, except, of course, when it gets wet. But how could that happen?
Yeah. And, you know, newspaper and rubber are almost indistinguishable from each other. Anyone who's ever let their kid have a newspaper ducky to play with in the
bathroom. Yes, exactly.
Or driven on tires made of the Daily News. No, that's...
We're going on a date. Be sure to bring your newspapers.
Oh!
Adam, police in King's Somborne, England, are on the lookout for a brazen thief and a massive crime spree. The bandit has returned four times in the past 2 weeks to a man's yard just to steal what?
I'm going to go with garden gnomes.
Garden gnomes, no.
No, flamingos.
No, even stranger.
Rutabagas.
No. Oh, you're getting there.
Oh, carrots. Broccoli. Mm.
Yes. Ah. A single head of broccoli each time. Poof, disappears. Oh. Cereal plant thieves often have a type, and the one on the loose in King's Somborne, England, is very, very specific. He has returned four times in the past 2 weeks under the cover of darkness.
I could imagine what that police sketch was like.
Ah. Anyway, whatever.
So did his ears look like this? No, longer. Longer ears.
Whoever is doing it.
Are you sure his teeth were that long? Oh, pronounced front teeth.
Couldn't really see his nose. It kept wiggling.
All right, we'll post this picture up at all the pubs around town.
Whoever has been stealing this broccoli has been coming by, stealing a single head of broccoli from gardener Frank Fahey. Fahey naturally responded by calling the police, and the police, with apparently little else to do, opened a full investigation into the matter. Ooh. Quote, one would hope somebody carrying several large heads of broccoli would be noticeable in a place like King's Somborne, where there's not much crime. That was a town spokesman. The chief of police, a six-foot rabbit named Sonny, just shrugged. Paula, we are always looking for proof that the rich simply have too much money. We may have found it. Swiss watchmaker Romain Jérôme is offering a new watch, which sold out in its first 48 hours on the market despite costing $300,000. The watch's big feature is that, unlike every other watch ever made, it does not do what?
Tick.
No.
I thought that was it. That's
Talk.
That's a good answer.
Tell time.
Exactly.
Oh.
Wait, so it sold out in the first 48 hours?
Yes.
How did they know?
Exactly.
They had to ask somebody wearing a Timex.
The $300,000 watch, Night Day, has two incredibly complicated handmade mechanisms. One tells you with its little dial when it is day. One tells you when it is night. Huh. Other than that, pal, you are on your own. Apparently what a watch like this says about the people who now are wearing it proudly is that, you know, they don't need to care about the time. They're powerful enough that people just wait for them. The company also sells a $500,000 watch made from material salvaged from the Titanic. Next up in their product line, a line of $100,000 suits so finely and beautifully made from nanofibers that only other fantastically tasteful people can see them.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care? If so, I can't imagine why.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. You can also visit the NPR online shop to pick up all your Wait Wait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Chris LeBeau calling from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, how are things in St. Louis, Chris?
Oh, the weather's great over here, and the Cardinals just had their best April ever.
So there you go. What more need you have for perfect life on this earth?
There we go.
Chris, welcome to our show. Carl Castle will now read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on just two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to go?
I am.
Here is your first limerick.
Since the surgery, my eyesight passes. But I can't get ahead with the lasses. Without my great frames, I'm off of my game. I think I will start wearing...
glasses.
Right, glasses. So, you feel dorky, you feel ugly in your Coke bottle glasses, so you pay some doctor thousands of dollars to slice off your corneas with a laser and glue them back on better. And you recover from the LASIK surgery, and you blink, and you try to focus, and what do you see? All the beautiful people are now wearing glasses. Runway models are now wearing fake, non-functional glasses in high-end fashion show. Fashion magazines report that people who have had their vision corrected with LASIK or contacts are putting glasses back on. According to one model, quote, uneducated people think models are dumb. Glasses make people take you more seriously, unquote. Yeah, you're not
what?
Dumb.
Wow.
You're not. No, they're not dumb. They've just bought $500 designer frames to put over eyes they paid $3,000 to correct so that they wouldn't need glasses anymore. Very good. Here is your next limerick.
A spa is an odd sort of place where I humble myself to gain grace. It's absurd. I've endured flurried turds of a bird. They were used in this mask for my...
face.
Right. So, do you want clear, beautiful skin? Willing to do anything to get it? Why not try the Geisha Facial, a mask whose secret ingredient is what we can politely call bird droppings. Genuine nightingale excrement is powdered, treated with ultraviolet light to kill bacteria, then mixed with rice bran to neutralize the odor and form a facial mask. It reportedly helps to brighten and cleanse the skin, leaving it with that porcelain white I was just looking up at that tree quality that's so hard to find. Said one woman, I was a little tentative at first, but there was no smell. It was creamy and rich. The mask is expensive, though, so some cash-challenged devotees have been trying to cut costs by posing as statues in public parks.
You know, I've been on this show for 10 years, and if I had known that you could say turd on it...
it would have been a very different show.
Oh, man. So many times, I can't tell you.
I think you can only say it in the form of a poem.
Yeah.
All right, here's your last limerick.
You infidels have vicious ploys for corrupting Iran's girls and boys. That Barbie's a plotter, just like Harry Potter. So we will forbid Western
toys.
Right. Iran announced this week that it is cracking down on the forces threatening the very fabric of Iranian society. Public enemy number one, Barbie. The 12-inch glamour queen is going to have to hop in her hot pink Corvette, get the heck out of Tehran, because she and her Western friends, Batman, Spider-Man, and Harry Potter, are no longer welcome. Officials have declared the toys to be, quote, destructive culturally and a social danger, and say the identity of our children has been put at risk. Mattel, the makers of Barbie, tried to compromise, offering to create a special product just for the Iranian market, the Burka Barbie Tehran Dreamhouse, which she is never allowed to leave. Carl, how did Chris do on our show?
Chris, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh, we're excited too. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing.
All right, bye-bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Adam Felber has the lead, Peter. He has 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2. Roy has 1.
Roy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. U.S. taxpayers began receiving their blanks on Monday.
Their tax rebates.
Right. Military forces in Afghanistan acted quickly to foil an assassination plot against blank this week.
Karzai.
Right. Albert Hofmann, the Swiss chemist who invented blank, died this week at the age of 102.
LSD.
Is that how you pronounce it? Scientific tests confirm that the remains found in Russia belong to Maria and Alexei, two children of the last blank.
The last czars, the Romanov.
Yes. Once again, the Milwaukee Brewers are hosting a promotion in which the first 500 male fans will get free blanks.
What's the name of that condom?
Hello Kitty.
Hello Kitty. Free Hello Kitties.
No. Free prostate exams.
Oh.
Two families.
Well, it's going to take forever to get in.
Line up. Two families in La Quinta, California found the blank that floated away from Pink Floyd leader Roger Waters' concert at the Coachella Music Festival.
Oh, it was an inflatable pig.
An inflatable pig. For the first time ever, Hillary Clinton appeared in a two-part interview on the Fox News show Blank.
Chris Wallace.
No, the O'Reilly Factor.
Oh, that's right.
A Pennsylvania man injured his hand when he tried to blank while drinking.
Juggle.
No.
Oh, I know. He was shooting bees.
He was shooting bees, yes. Carl, does he get credits for this?
No.
No. Whoa. Whoa.
Oh. We count the first answer. Oh.
But I didn't finish the first answer.
That was a cold breeze, man. Oh, man. Anyway, yes, he was trying to shoot some bees with his little revolver. David Walls was enjoying a nice afternoon of drinking when a bunch of bees began swarming over him. Good thing I have my trusty 22, he must have thought.
Mm-hmm.
Took aim at the bees. The bees escaped unharmed, but Walls ended up shooting a much larger target, his own left hand. He is fine. Mm-hmm. What was he thinking, though, shooting at the bees? You know you can't shoot the bees, all of them.
Uh-huh.
But maybe he's thinking he'll just shoot one and make an example of them. Carl, how did Roy do on our quiz?
Roy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 11 points, and Roy has the lead.
Well done.
I should have 6.
Well, that's going to help you.
Paula, you're up next.
Oh, boy.
Paula, you're up next. Please fill in the blanks. More than 200 people were hurt on Monday in southeastern Virginia when blanks hit the area.
Tornadoes.
Right. On Tuesday, the Supreme Court ruled that the state of Indiana can require voters to show a blank.
IDs.
Right. The Census Bureau reported that the number of blanks in this country has grown to 45 million, making them the largest minority group.
Hispanic.
Right. The call girl in the Elliot Spitzer scandal is suing the founder of the Blank video series for exploiting her image and name.
Wild Girls?
Oh, almost.
Girls Gone Wild?
Girls Gone Wild, yes. This week, Blank returned to the set of How I Met Your Mother to reprise her role as Abby the Secretary.
Maggie Smith.
Britney Spears.
So close.
Fulfilling what he said was a lifelong dream, magician David Blaine set a world record in blanking.
Choking.
No. Holding his breath. In Ontario, police arrested for street racing a man driving a blank.
A tricycle.
A garbage truck. The garbage truck driver who was working at the time was clocked to doing 75 miles an hour in a 37 mile an hour zone.
How much garbage do you get?
He picked up a lot of garbage.
Yeah.
A police spokesman said, quote, "I don't think this guy is going to get the Employee of the Month prize anytime soon." Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10, but Roy still has the lead with 11 points.
Mm. All right. How many then does Adam need to win?
4 to tie, 5 to win. Ooh, out.
All right. Here we go, Adam. This is for the game.
Mm-hmm.
A convoy of truckers traveled to Capitol Hill this week to protest high blank prices.
Gas prices.
Right. An NBC Wall Street Journal poll finds an unprecedented 73% of American voters think the country is on the blank.
Country is on the wrong track.
Exactly right. Fans lined up at midnight to be the first to get copies of the new version of the video game Blank.
Grand Theft Auto 4, I have one.
Police in Florida said that Deborah Jean Palfrey, better known as the Blank, has committed suicide.
DC Madam.
Right. Police in southern China discovered a factory that was manufacturing blanks for overseas customers.
Free Tibet flags.
Right. And what Simon Cowell called the strangest American idol ever, fellow judge Paula Abdul critiqued both songs performed by one contestant, even though blank.
The contestant didn't sing those songs.
Right. He just sung one song.
Yeah.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice acknowledged that it is embarrassing for blank to still be included on the U.S. terrorist watch list.
Iraq?
Nelson Mandela.
Oh.
Police in Estonia arrested a blind man for driving while blank.
Blind.
Driving while drunk.
Oh. Not while blind.
No. You can do that. Just don't be drunk. They were shocked to find a completely blind, a drunk man driving a car, but it's not as bad as he sounds. Driver Christian Gradolf was being given directions by a sighted friend in the passenger seat. Gradolf explained, "Despite the fact that I am blind, driving is something I enjoy, and I am, in fact, very good at it." How would he know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you've made it. You're here. Great.
Great, yeah. Never actually left the driveway. That's a good friend. That's a really good friend. His friend is just sitting in the passenger seat next to him making vroom noises.
Yeah.
You're terrific. We're home. Let's go.
Carl, did Adam do well enough to win?
He needed 5 correct answers to win outright. He had 6 correct answers. So with 15 points, Adam Feldberg is just...
Well done.
There it is.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists how Miley Cyrus, also known as Hannah Montana, will repair her shattered image. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing first-hand homeowner reviews on local contractors like plumbers, painters, and movers. Details at angieslist.com. The members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners, on the web at realtor.com. And the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. VJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, what will Miley Cyrus do to repair her image after the Vanity Fair photos? Paula Poundstone.
She'll just flat out become a prostitute and then the photos won't seem so bad in comparison.
Adam Felber.
She'll offset that by posing for a set of pictures in the style of Robert Mapplethorpe.
Mm-hmm. And Roy Blunt Jr.
She will call upon her pastor, Reverend Jeremiah somebody, who will give a testimonial which unfortunately goes in this direction. She has been warped by a satanic cult in which dogs wear hats and are named Goofy and mice have nephews. Damn Disney!
Well, if Miley Cyrus does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Roy Blunt Jr., Adam Felber, and Paula Poundstone. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.